And we wanted to slow down for a second and ask, what do we know about COVID-19? What does it do to us? Out of 990,000 known cases in the U.S., about 118,000 are listed as recovered. But are they really? We know the virus attacks the lungs, but there's other long-term damage from being in medically induced comas on ventilators. Some people can't concentrate. There's heart damage beyond the usual strain on the heart from illness. Dr. Harlan Krumholz is a cardiologist and professor of medicine at the Yale School of Medicine. And Dr. Krumholz, you've said this virus can attack almost anything in the body with devastating consequences. Its ferocity is breathtaking and humbling. What does that mean as a doctor to be humbled by a virus?
I think we're humbled in both directions. We're perplexed by the large number of people carrying it and spreading it without even knowing the harm that they're causing. And at the same time, we see that there's a minority of people who are affected in devastating ways. The virus can attack almost any organ system within the body. And as I've said, can do so with a ferocity that's rarely seen and can place people in positions where almost every body system is affected.
Well, let's talk about that. We know it's respiratory. It causes pneumonia. Patients have said they feel a weight on their chest. They can't breathe. But why do they also feel terrible pain and fatigue? What's happening?
The body's reacting to the virus. There's a foreign invader. The body's defense system is preparing to do battle, and in doing so releases a lot of substances that both help us to fight the virus, but can also have what we call sort of systemic effects. They can make us feel lousy, and it's almost as if it's friendly fire from our own body. So it doesn't just exist in the lungs, but it exists in many places, including like the GI system and in the kidneys and in a lot of places. It's likely that we're going to continue to learn more about its direct harm. So people may have heard about this term cytokine storm. You know, these are these substances that are released as the body's fighting against the virus. It really is this sense that within the body, there is this sort of violent battle taking place.
Well, then, you know, answer perhaps one of the questions we had. There was speculation that younger, healthier people might be fighting it even more and have more of that cytokine storm that then takes over their body.
You know, that's another thing about this virus that continues to be perplexing. When you look back in history, for example, at the 1918-1919 flu, it seemed like the younger people were actually more susceptible to the virus. And there was a lot of hypotheses about just what you've said, that actually maybe a stronger immune system led to a stronger overcompensation. This, in contrast, seems to be most damaging to people who are older and people who've got other underlying conditions. Is it something about the immune system as it gets older? For this particular virus, it has trouble regulating. So it doesn't mean that young people are entirely protected. And we know that there are some tragic and unfortunate cases in younger people, but it's much less common.
And by the way, everything that we're talking about, we know we don't know enough yet, but we're looking for the latest thinking. And that brings us to the heart. Here's a sentence that caught our eye in Scientific American, which had a terrific piece on the heart in COVID-19. Patients with no pre-existing heart conditions who incurred heart damage during their COVID-19 infection, in other words, they were fine going in, have the infection, now they have heart damage, were more likely to die than patients with previous heart disease. Does that tell you that this virus isn't just taxing the heart, it's getting in the heart, it's attacking it?
Right, and I think it's important to unpack that. People published some articles, and many of them not yet peer-reviewed, but put them up online and were circulating that were important, that were telling us that if the blood test, which indicates damage to the heart, began to rise, that it was showing abnormalities, then that was a signal that that person had a much higher risk of having a difficult course in the hospital or even dying. Now, is that because of the damage to the heart? That would represent that the virus had somehow affected the heart, either the virus directly or through this reaction of the immune system. Or was it just simply a marker to say, once you see that, you know that the disease is widespread? The fact that it was reflecting damage to the heart was signaling that they were at higher risk and that we needed to pay attention more to those patients. But there's also a condition where the heart is markedly damaged, likely as a direct result of the virus. So many more people are showing mild damage to the heart than a smaller group is showing more damage to the heart. And that's the consequence that we fear. That's really major, in many cases, we think, damage that will persist after people get better.
Let's talk more about long-term effects. Damage to the lungs. Is there concern that ventilators life-saving ventilators may not be the answer for all patients. And then the second, you know, of course you think, well, if not a ventilator, what? But the high percentage of people on ventilators who have this long-term impact, why is that?
There are a lot of theories about what's going on with the respiratory distress, with the problems that people have with breathing, and what's the best response to them. There have been some people who have suggested that people have been put on ventilators earlier than maybe they should have and would have been benefited by trying to keep them off ventilators longer. There also have been maneuvers like putting people on their stomach and trying different things to prevent them from going on ventilators, in part because once on ventilators, it has often been difficult to get people off of ventilators and to help them recover. And some people have suggested that the ventilators may even be playing a role in that. But in the moment where people are having trouble breathing and they don't have good oxygenation, these are very difficult decisions. But people are trying to come up with different ideas. For example, one idea is that many of these people are suffering from the development of very small blood clots. And these blood clots in the very small blood vessels of the body are causing problems, including in the lungs. And at least in one place, they were even suggesting that if you gave people medication that broke up blood clots, that actually they might do better. Now, all of this needs to be tested. But what it shows you is that people are thinking deeply about lots of different mechanisms. We do not really deeply understand what we call the pathophysiology of this, what's really causing the underlying problems.
Right. You mentioned blood clots. People might know Broadway actor Nick Cordero. He starred in Rock of Ages. He recently had his leg amputated because he developed blood clots with a terrible bout with COVID-19. But again, some of the damage, kidney damage, so much so that some health experts are worrying about a shortage of dialysis machines. Why would the kidneys be so attacked?
Yeah, again, it's this idea that these entry points for the virus, the place where the virus docks in and then gets, you know, taken up by tissue, also exists within the kidneys. And there have been some biopsies that have shown evidence that the virus has directly gotten into the kidney. But then also there, again, is some concern that the immune system, in its effort to defend the body, ends up causing some damage. And then just by the course of being severely ill, there's lots of fluctuations in fluids and treatment with medications. So the combination, the direct action of the virus, the reaction of the body, the fluctuations in people's conditions and blood pressure and the medications we use, all these things can come together to affect the kidneys in ways that makes it more difficult for people to recover and can put them in a difficult position when they do. So that's why you're hearing a lot about the dialysis.
And for those people who come off ventilators and have lung damage, we're hearing it could take a year for them to recover. There's things like scarring, other diseases.
There's a lot we have to learn about the long-term recovery. Anything from, how about people who've had it without knowing it? Will anything crop up down the line that can cause problems, to people who've had it in a mild way, but also these people who have had it in a severe way and have survived a difficult hospital course? Many of them will have had damage. We don't know if that damage will get better. And then the long-term effects are something that also we're concerned about. So, for example, often there are post-viral syndromes that are related to fatigue or pain or trouble concentrating that can last for long periods of time. We need to study that. And then there's an important piece of this that relates to just the trauma of it, you know, so that people have been through difficult ICUs, almost died without their families. People need to be able to be supported through this period because in a way it's like a post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, we want to say, hey, you're better, you're home. But sometimes that's only the beginning of an extended recovery period where people are getting their strength back, getting their bearings, and also their mental health is suffering in that period because they've just been through something so challenging and difficult. And so we need to, as a health profession, be very attuned, not just to managing and helping people in the most acute moments, the life-threatening moments, but we have to be there for them as they recover. And we have to, again, spread knowledge and learn how we can best support people throughout this. If we're lucky, it won't have a big effect downstream, but we have to be ready and poised to help people as they go through this if these things do crop up.
So perhaps a second wave of infections coming fall or winter, but also a wave of care for people who've already been through it is what it sounds like you and others are anticipating. Dr. Harlan Krumholz, cardiologist, professor of medicine at the Yale School of Medicine, answering some of our questions about the impact of COVID-19. Dr. Krumholz, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.